Friday, November 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Islamic State fighters are urged to fight to the death in Mosul.
The reports themselves are not necessarily accurate and would definitely require verification by an independent source.
Reports of new clashes in Myanmar. Also ahead, we meet a U.S. presidential candidate you may not have heard of. And big winners at the Country Music Awards. It's all on today's International Edition. Fewer than 5,000 Islamic State fighters trying to hold on to the Iraqi city of Mosul are being urged to fight to the death in a message sent via social media by the terror group's leader and self-declared Caliph Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The message is his first since last December, and it comes nearly 3 weeks into the Iraqi and Kurdish campaign to retake Mosul, which has been under Islamic State control for 2 years. As long as militants control the provincial capital, some locals in cities and villages outside the front line say they fear that nowhere in the area is safe. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Bartella, Iraq.
Soldiers say civilians are trapped in the battle zones, and they are fighting IS militants on the streets. The next phase of the struggle for Mosul is coming soon, and soldiers say it is expected to be long and dangerous for everyone involved.
IS techniques are suicide bombs and explosive cars, which are dangerous for everyone. But we want to liberate Mosul, and our soldiers are well trained.
As towns and villages surrounding Mosul are recaptured, a world of destruction is revealed. Shops and homes are in rubble. Windows are shattered, and shell casings are scattered on the streets. There is no running water or electricity in this town, but residents trickle in to see what has become of their homes.
It has been 2 years since we've seen our homes and our city, and we are tired of being refugees. It is not just our house that was destroyed, it is the whole city.
Vehicles with white flags are appearing at refugee camps, carrying families fleeing the battle zones. The International Organization for Migration says more than 20,000 people have been displaced since the offensive began more than 2 weeks ago, and as many as a million more are expected. But many displaced families say if their suffering is necessary to destroy IS, they have no choice but to pay the price. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Bartella, Iraq.
And as the operations continue in and around Mosul, you can find all the latest on our website at voanews.com. Well, yesterday at this time, we were waiting to see who was going to win baseball's World Series, and a 108-year drought came to an end. It's time for us to check out what's buzzing online with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. She joins me here in the studio with today's trending stories. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Yes, the World Series wrapped up Wednesday night, and if you're anywhere in North America, it'll be hard for you not to notice that on social media. As for me, I'd say roughly 90% of my Facebook and 70% of Twitter feed is about the championship. The annual baseball game was between the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians.
And both of those teams had a long winning drought. Explain to our listeners
Absolutely.
What was so special.
So not only was it one of the most dramatic and intense games ever, but like you mentioned earlier, the Chicago Cubs won for the first time in 108 years. That's a long time.
It is very long. In fact, none of us remember that. What are people sharing about that on Twitter?
Jim, although it was a great day for the Cubs fans, that was not the case for the Indians, of course. In fact, people are having a good laugh about an Indians fan who prematurely got a tattoo that shows his team as this year's champion. One person tweeted, "Hey, you can always change the A to a U, right? That'll change the word from being champions to chumps."
Harsh, harsh. Well, maybe he can change the year by one number.
Maybe.
What else is trending?
American action star Steven Seagal, because he's now officially a Russian citizen. Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree granting citizenship to the Hollywood actor. People are tweeting about Seagal's relationship with Putin, with one tweet claiming he described the Russian president as one of the greatest world leaders.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. We're about ready to get a new world leader ourselves. What's
That's
happening
right.
on the U.S. election side?
So hashtag I am with her is trending, which is a play on words from Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan, I am with her, and NBC reporter Katie Turr. Donald Trump singled out the reporter during a rally in Florida while criticizing media coverage of his events. Trump accused her of not covering certain aspects of his campaign efforts. Now, a lot of reporters jumped to her defense and started using I am with her. Jim, back to you.
All right. Thanks for that great wrap-up, G. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and our individual accounts are out there as well at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, 30 civilians and 2 U.S. soldiers killed in Afghan fighting. Indonesia President and Vice President urge calm ahead of hardline Islamic protest. North Korea keeps focus on South's government scandal. 2 crewmen arrested after Indonesian boat capsizes. Philippine fishermen visit disputed shoal in diplomatic test. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the VOAnews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, be sure to download and use the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Speaking Thursday in Japan, where she received pledges of billions in development funds, Myanmar State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi said her government is responding to unrest in Western Rakhine State based on the rule of law. She described the situation as extremely delicate, adding that care is needed in responding. Dozens of people have been killed or arrested, and thousands have fled their homes since security operations began there 3 weeks ago. Australian National University visiting Professor Trevor Wilson, who served in Myanmar, also known as Burma, as an ambassador, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that last month's border post attack is a disturbing and surprising new development in an area with recurring sectarian clashes.
Most of the politically active groups in the area were not armed before. Both the Rohingya group had not taken up arms for many, many decades. And, of course, the other side, their opponents, maybe they were Buddhist or whoever they were, they haven't been armed either. But this has changed fairly recently, and anybody could be responsible for these various attacks that you mentioned. But the problem is that there's been no independent access to these areas, either by journalists, by international agencies, or by anybody else who could report in a neutral way about who had caused the violence.
There have been reports of killing, raping, and the burning of homes, primarily aimed at the Rohingya. As you said, these reports are difficult to substantiate. I don't believe there's been a claim of responsibility for the killing of the border police.
There's been a long pattern of violent action in Myanmar where nobody claims responsibility, where it's not clear who has done what, where individuals and little bands or groups are posing as somebody else. And because there's not much media or not much other people around to be witnessing what's going on, reports come out, and the reports are always in very alarmist language, usually making accusations against one side or the other. The reports themselves are not necessarily accurate and would definitely require verification by an independent source.
Well, communal violence goes way back. There were outbreaks of violence in that region back in 2012.
It's in fact the activities that happened in 2012, which were very violent in which quite a lot of people died, that have partly caused the problems today, because some of the Rohingya people, who were very largely the people who were living in segregated areas in very poor conditions, some of them actually moved and were relocated, and that's contributed to the very large number of internally displaced people.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, this is all coming on the watch of the civil administration led by Aung San Suu Kyi. She has been criticized for being somewhat cautious in her response to what's going on. Is this going to tarnish her administration?
I think it will cast a pall over her administration because it's going to be one of the issues on which her government is going to be judged, rightly or wrongly.
Ambassador Trevor Wilson said this could be a protracted problem because there's no national consensus on how the Rohingya, who have been denied citizenship, should be treated. He said they suffer extreme discrimination and often live in appalling conditions. He also says the government must tread carefully as Rakhine State is a border area and it's largely under the control of the military. U.S. President Barack Obama is proving to be one of Democrat Hillary Clinton's most vocal surrogates, as he mocked Republican Donald Trump on Thursday as uniquely unqualified to be president. Just days ahead of the national election, Mr. Obama headed to Florida's biggest city, Jacksonville, in the northern part of the state, where Mr. Trump also campaigned on Thursday. In the last dash for votes, the Republican candidate also planned rallies in the eastern state of Pennsylvania and two more in North Carolina. Meanwhile, Clinton is also focused on North Carolina, where she is staging two campaign events. Two new major national polls show Clinton edging ahead of Trump among likely voters, with the New York Times CBS News poll giving her a 45-42% lead. The Washington Post ABC News tracking poll shows her with a 47-45 advantage. Having only entered the U.S. presidential race in August, independent candidate Evan McMullen is not a household name in American politics. But in his native state of Utah, where McMullen stands a realistic chance of pulling an upset victory over Donald Trump, he has laid a grassroots framework that could extend beyond his candidacy. It's called a new conservative movement that he believes could reshape the American electorate. VOA spoke with the presidential nominee in Salt Lake City.
I'm Evan McMullen, and I'm running for president.
Evan McMullen will be the first to tell you that his candidacy for president of the United States is limited by resources and time. His name is only on 11 state ballots, and he has virtually no chance of winning at all. But simply running as a conservative alternative to a controversial Republican candidate could be a launching pad for a message he hopes will carry forward nationwide beyond Election Day.
People like me who are constitutional conservatives who believe that all men and women are created equal and that we are all endowed by the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we can't possibly be part of a party that is going to be a populist white nationalist movement.
McMullen is careful not to categorize all Trump supporters this way, but he worries that many of them have strayed from traditional conservative values. After November 8, if the Republican Party continues to head down the path of Trumpism, as McMullen calls it, he'll be ready to lead like-minded voters in a new direction.
I really believe that we're building something that will be able to help provide leadership for this country that will be unifying and that will help us move into the future, that will help us expand economic opportunity to all people, will help us deal with some of the generational challenges we find in our minority communities.
Independent party movements have largely failed to become competitive in the modern U.S. political arena. But McMullen points to exceptions, including the Republican Party itself, which rose to power on an anti-slavery platform in 1854 and was embraced by President Abraham Lincoln. Utah political scientists are split on the feasibility of McMullen's ambitions.
A better tack would be, you know, I'm starting a movement to fix the Republican Party, to make it, the what it once was and return it back to its former greatness or something like that. That would be a better way to go. Threatening to start a new party is no way to gather people in who are identifying with that party, I don't think.
But Damon Kahn, a college roommate of McMullen and professor at Utah State University, says many of the state's voters see McMullen as more than simply an anti-Trump choice moving forward.
People who are getting excited about his candidacy are showing enthusiasm for the brand of Republicanism that Evan McMullen would like to see as the future of conservatism in the United States.
For now, McMullen says it's wait and see whether pro-Trump Republicans choose to recommit themselves to a platform of what he calls equality and liberty. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, Salt Lake City, Utah.
And we invite you to check out this story on our website at voanews.com, where you can see Mr. McMullen and the story on our video version of the story. And also check us out on Twitter at @VOA_IE and also on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
On Tuesday, November 8th, all eyes will be on America as voters choose the next U.S. president. Tune in to our live comprehensive coverage with our correspondents around the country and around the world, starting Tuesday at 2200 hours UTC GMT and continuing through Wednesday morning right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The 50th anniversary of the Country Music Association Awards, or CMAs, happened this week, complete with controversy, legendary performances, and awesome tributes. International Edition's Sarah Williams talks to Nikki Strong about some of the show's highlights, including Beyoncé.
Oh my goodness, Beyoncé. That was a very symbolic and juicy performance on many levels. I'll try to break it down. She was definitely one of the surprises, especially since it was announced the day of that she was performing, and that sparked a lot of backlash and controversy. Firstly, many in country, you know, critics and fans, etc., interpret Beyoncé's outspoken political views to be unpatriotic and anti-cop, and therefore inconsistent with what country music stands for. So, you know, how dare she be included and pollute the country music tradition in the brand. And then country fans also just, you know, we get tired of pop artists being included in country shows in ways that decenter the genre or the country artist. So, you know, country has its own incredible superstars, and we don't, you know, necessarily need a Beyoncé or anyone else to really celebrate ourselves. But in spite of the controversy, Beyoncé came on. She performed with the Dixie Chicks, not a countrified version of one of her pop songs, but the country song off of her album Lemonade called Daddy's Lessons. Now, Beyoncé, I think it's important to note, doing country is not a gimmick. I remember reading when she was part of Destiny's Child how much they loved country music. She's from Texas. She grew up in it. And in her visual album Lemonade, Daddy's Lessons also visually pays ode to the African-American cowboy tradition and participation and contribution to country western culture, and that is really rarely celebrated or really acknowledged in any mainstream way. So I find this to be interesting because country music overall draws so much on African-American cultural and musical traditions, but practically never centers African-Americans. So they're usually relegated to the background and support. So when
except
it comes
for, like, I was going to say Charlie Pride.
Or right, exactly. Well, that's my point. I mean, when you think of hugely commercial, successful black country artists, many people just can name Charlie Pride.
Yeah.
They may say Darius Rucker. They might include Ray Charles. And so that says something. So Beyoncé being centered as an African-American, even as a woman, too, doing her own country song, celebrating her people's traditions right alongside everyone else, was very powerful. And I think it's strategic that if she was to perform at any country music show, it was the 50th anniversary, a show that is anchored in celebrating the history of the awards and the genre itself. So I thought it was very symbolic and brilliant on her part. In her performance, she brought the traditional hold down to the Country Music Awards. I mean, she created a party, and people were on their feet, and they embraced it. They gave her a standing ovation. I thought she was engaging and fun and gracious. And I also have to acknowledge Dixie Chicks being a part of her performance. In fact, the performance is a mashup of Daddy's Lessons mixed in with the Dixie Chicks song Long Time Gone, and they've been gone from the CMAs for a while too. I think that was a little, you know, wink. The Dixie Chicks have experienced firsthand what it's like to be ostracized from country music, the industry, and the community for having a different political viewpoint and being outspoken about it. That happened with a criticism of Bush back in 2003, and this was their first time back in a long time. So when the song Daddy's Lessons came out, this is so loaded, country music critics and fans were like, this is not a country song. There was a lot of backlash against Beyoncé for this song. And even Blake Shelton was like, stop it. This is a country song. You know, just get over it. And the Dixie Chicks were the first country group to boldly embrace the song as country by performing it live in their shows on tour. And plus, the Dixie Chicks and Beyonce, they are all from Texas. So it all made sense and just really turned out wonderful. So I thought the performance was hashtag winning on diversity, on inclusivity, on history, and even education, daddy's lesson. So overall, I think the CMAs did a great job of encapsulating so much history in an enjoyable, engaging way within a relatively small amount of time.
Who are some of the winners?
Okay. Yes, the winners. Okay. So here are some of them. Garth Brooks took home the coveted Entertainer of the Year. Carrie Underwood beat out Miranda Lambert's winning streak for Female Vocalist of the Year. Chris Stapleton won for Male Vocalist. New Artist of the Year was Maren Morris. Album of the Year, Mr. Misunderstood, by Eric Church. Song of the Year, Humble and Kind, sung by Tim McGraw, written by Lori McKenna. And Music Video of the Year was Fire Away by Chris Stapleton.
You can hear music from all of the CMA winners, legends, and nominees inside Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can catch highlights from the CMAs on Facebook and Twitter at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you.
Came into this world, daddy's little girl. Daddy made a soldier out of me.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Facebook. Check us out on VOA Now. And be sure to follow us on that Twitter thing. Just look up the handle at VOA_IE. You'll get all kinds of great updates day and night on Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We thank you greatly for joining us today. Don't forget, check us out on Tuesday as we have wall-to-wall election coverage. We'll find out who our next president will be. You'll find out right here on VOA. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Under its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. State Department is offering up to $3 million for information leading to the location, arrest, and/or conviction of a key ISIL operative, Gulmurad Halimov. Halimov was born in Tajikistan in 1975 and is a former Tajik Special Operations Colonel, police commander, and military sniper. He was once the commander of a police special operations unit in the Ministry of Interior of Tajikistan. He is now a member of ISIL, or Daesh, as it is called in Arabic, and an ISIL recruiter. In May 2015, he announced in a 10-minute propaganda video that he fights for the terrorist group, and he has called publicly for violent acts against the United States, Russia, and Tajikistan. The United States designated Halimov a specially designated global terrorist in September 2015. He was also sanctioned by the United Nations as a terrorist in February 2016. He is wanted by the government of Tajikistan. In June 2015, Interpol issued a red notice for Halimov, alerting member nations that he is a wanted person and should be apprehended for extradition to Tajikistan. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If you have information on Gulmurad Halimov, contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website at rewardsforjustice.net. Email at info@rewardsforjustice.net, phone at 1-800-877-3927, or mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.